If I opened their Google Analytics and showed you, there would be thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of keywords that produce one visit per month. But you know what? That adds up to a lot of traffic.
Right.
And they get a lot of business from it. All right, it's time for another episode of Grow the Dream today.
Is really, really long content great content? Because Rand Fishkin doesn't think so.
That's a long sentence.
By the way, today's not a long show.
No, I disagree with Rand, that is.
Also, what does the latest thing from the FBI and Apple really mean?
Yeah, we cut it short this time, I think.
We don't spend a lot of time on that.
No, we get
more than we wanted, less than we used to.
Yeah. But a lot of really interesting discussion. Plus, Josh's tools of the week.
Yeah, we got something to help turn one visitor into three, and then a tool to help you write better, unless you're wrong.
I'm interested in both.
All that and more coming up right now.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to another episode of Grow the Dream. It's episode 61.
Marketing Mondays.
Okay.
That was nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, that's right. You're one of those hip-hop guys.
Yeah.
Well, plus, you know...
One of those old guys that listens to hip-hop.
Yeah.
What's funny is that while this part of our show has music in it...
Yeah.
We can't hear it while we're recording this part of the show.
Oh, I know. It's always rough when I go back and listen.
we need
one of those tuners.
Yeah, we need to give you like a tuning fork so you know what key we're in.
Yeah. That'd be helpful.
But that what you just did, I don't think will clash with the key, you know.
That's good.
It's funny to me, though.
You got to do more rhythmic. Well, it might clash with the rhythm.
Yeah, it could.
It could.
But it's funny to me how rarely there's actually a problem with the key. Like, I think you sort of innately know.
No,
you
probably
just have
not.
A skill.
I don't know. Really?
Anyway.
Probably not.
Don't ask me. I'm musically illiterate.
All right, yeah. So I have two cups of coffee here.
Yeah.
Because, Josh, you brought cold brew this morning.
I expected to pour cold brew on air, and I was excited about that. And
we had delays. It's all good.
We had delays and technical issues and all that good stuff.
Windows, let's just say we are not fans of Windows 10.
Windows 10 still loading.
Windows 10.
Delay the start of our show by what, like a half hour?
Oh, at least. Oh. So, you know, the there's a guy named Steve Gibson.
I know a guy.
Known as like a
there's this guy.
Security expert and like, you know, cybersecurity, info security, that sort of thing.
Okay.
He created a tool called Never 10. The reason he created the the reason this tool exists is because Microsoft is being a tool.
Yeah.
Windows 7 is getting automatic updates to Windows 10 now. So anyway, you could download this tool. Just Google Never 10, which I think is a nice play.
I like it.
On Never Trump.
Ah, well, yeah. I thought of that,
like,
but sure.
Like the political moment that we're in made it right. Perfect to name your thing Never 10.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so anyway, you can download that if you're a Windows 7 user and you don't want Windows 10 to happen.
You could just not use Windows.
Yeah, well, you could use one of these right here.
That's true. Or one of these right here.
Yeah.
This thing will never get Windows 10.
Have we ever talked about that?
My Chromebook?
Yeah, I feel like it's an exciting switch, and I like it because, okay, so there's a trend.
True.
You know about this trend of minimalism, and I love that it's transferring over to technology, and
yeah,
I'm on board with it. So why'd you switch? What are you using
it for? I was just going to say,
I'm going
to take this to my tiny house, and my machine was getting to the point where physically it was starting to fall apart, like the hinges were, you know, problems were happening mechanical.
I remember. I was complaining to you. I was like, dude, get a freaking computer. You work on this thing all the time.
I know.
I replaced that typewriter already.
Yeah, but I have a great machine. It runs Windows 7. It's got 8 gigs of RAM. It's got plenty of, you know, stuff.
But it's falling apart.
But it's physically showing its age because I'm pretty rough on stuff. You mm-hmm. know, it's true. So I needed something that I could take with me, throw in my backpack and go. And then I thought, well, I'll just leave that older laptop set up permanently in my office and just leave it there. You know, so I needed a machine that was capable of doing some stuff. I needed a long battery life, but I didn't need the distractions of having a full computer.
I gotcha. So there's enough. It only lets you do a certain amount of things.
Right. I can't do video editing, audio editing. I can't use Photoshop. I can't. But I can write. and I can, you know, manage projects, and I can do client interactions.
You can do all the internet stuff. You can get emails, that sort of thing.
You can manage it at documents because you've got Google Docs.
And I slowly had been making that transition. We use Google Apps in our business for everything. So, you know, Gmail, calendar, all that stuff. Of course, it's all branded. It uses the domain name and everything.
Why did you send me a Word document today, this week, Rod?
Because I still prefer Word. That's why.
Okay, but you have to understand. Word. All right. In this situation, I am the customer. You want me to read your... When I see a Word document, I hesitate to click it because...
In Slack?
Oh, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. It's a Word document.
Is that... You know, that's not demonic. Just saying. Well, you can just click on it and it opens like magically and the words are all right there, just like it was a Google Doc.
But you do know that Microsoft has scripting languages that can be exploited in Word.
Okay, I'm just saying. I didn't know that.
So from
that
both angles
really
there.
Shock me, but that's always been the case.
And so if your computer were infected with something and you sent him a Word doc, it doesn't matter. Have you seen recently some of the stuff that's been happening to Macintoshes?
I didn't want to hear.
By the way, Chromebooks are much more secure than Macs.
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah,
I'm not going to argue that.
But that's partly because they can't do anything.
Right.
Right. Who wants to target them?
I mean, now you can run the Chrome extensions, though. This is the thing. What I learned is that the Chrome extension universe is much bigger than I ever dreamed. I've been using a few Chrome extensions because, I've been a Chrome user for many years now. But I did find myself needing to do maybe a thing or two that this machine didn't have built in.
Sure.
FTP.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
So, but there's an extension for that. And there are extensions for just about anything else you can dream
of. Okay, why would you need FTP if that computer doesn't have its own file management, right? Everything
it does.
Stored
in
the cloud.
No, it's not. That's not the case. It has 16 gigs of local storage.
And you can manage it separately from the cloud? You can have files on there that don't exist anywhere else?
In fact, you have to manage it separately from the cloud.
Oh, nice.
But it's very easy to move back and forth between your cloud storage. In fact, one of the things that I love about this is when I bought it, they gave me a code that I went to Google and typed in, and I got another 100 gigs of storage in my Google account.
Sweet.
Like permanently or just like a 2-year thing?
I think it expires.
Yeah. But they did that when I bought a Nexus 4. Remember? I used Android for like 5 months.
That's right.
And I loved it for the bigger screen because this is back in the day before the iPhone 6 was released.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And then I heard about Apple releasing the iPhone 6, and I was like, yep, I'm going back to iPhone as soon as I get my bigger screen.
And I did. Yes.
And I bought this phone. Still have it.
Oh, that's great. Anyway,
sorry.
So, little technology sidebar.
You know, I love them. Technology sidebars. All right, Word, stop using it. Phase yourself out. I think we can all agree.
No, but what I will do to appease the inflexible ones around is I will copy and paste it into a Google Doc.
No, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is open up the thingamajigger.
Oh, that's very helpful.
No, you import it. You import the file.
That's what I was trying to say. Import it right in. You don't have to do that.
And then we could actually make changes to that document. And then you could see those changes.
Right. Yeah, I can do that.
It's cool. And it allows you to comment and all sorts of other
No, I understand. I've used Google Docs a lot. I get Google Docs.
Oh, and you don't have to command save all day long because every like 3 seconds, it saves it automatically.
Right. I've just used Word for so long and all the shortcut keys, and they're not all the same in Google Docs. And so... it's very fast and easy for me to write in Word.
Okay. All right. And speaking of writing, I've got a good tool of the week. We're bringing it back. We are bringing back tools of the week.
Yes.
Because everybody loves a good tool.
But we're going to do it later, right?
Yeah. But it's along the lines
of
writing and writing better.
Well, all right. Good.
Yeah, I'm going to make you test it out since you write more than me.
Yeah.
See if you think of it's
well,
any
that'll
good.
That'll be fun. So, that'll be fun.
Do we have any news? Got some news this week?
All right. So the FBI thing. I mean, this thing continues. Of course, we reported last week that the FBI had...
I'm going to start a timer right now that limits us to 4 minutes of conversation on the FBI thing.
Good luck.
But you have to add some time in because you just used some talking about the fact
just,
that you were...
Just
okay,
go.
Anyway, so the FBI had pulled out, but they hadn't pulled out completely last week when we did our show.
Right.
They had simply said, hey, hold on while we try this other thing, and they had until April 5th, right?
Right.
Which is today.
Everything keeps happening at the beginning of the week, and then we don't record, and then it gets published the week later, so it's kind of delayed.
That's okay. So now the FBI has officially dropped the case.
Right.
Because they said, hey, we got in. And the first release about this said that they were able to access, this was very carefully worded, they were able to access the data, but they weren't sure if they were going to be able to decrypt the data. So
they still needed Apple's help at that point in time?
No. They said, we don't need Apple anymore. That's what they said. A third party has allowed us to access the data, but they weren't really sure about whether or not they were going to be able to decrypt it. So, well, I got news for you guys. Accessing and decrypting, this is the thrust of the whole case. I mean, it all hinged upon decrypting the data, not on accessing the data.
Right.
So, and that's what they did say. They wanted the court to compel Apple to help them decrypt the data because by unlocking the phone, the data would be decrypted. That was the whole point of this case.
All right, so I'm a little confused on the difference between access and decrypting because
exactly.
If you unlock the phone, you're also accessing it then. You're not able to access it.
No, not necessarily. No.
All right, so tell me how in a locked phone you access the data.
Okay, so it's like a USB drive. Imagine you had a USB drive with an encrypted file on it. You have the file technically on that USB drive. You can copy it to another USB drive. You can copy it to your hard drive. You can send it to your mom.
You can't do that in a locked phone though, right? No.
Yes, you can.
You can. Pull the phone apart and pull the storage component out.
Physically. So because they have the phone in their hands, because they have the phone in their hands, you're saying they have the data.
They can copy the data off to another device.
All right. Well, all right. That's, to me, that's like a difference without a difference. But
right.
But so, that's my point is that they dropped the case on the basis of accessing the data.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're making that differentiation that you're making.
Well, then so here's the thing. If what the court order was to compel Apple to create tools, software tools, that would allow the FBI to hammer the phone, which would unlock it if they got the combination right, the passcode or whatever,
Now, the story, but the story I read said that they had gotten past that suicide thing after 10 wrong tries.
Okay.
So then that to me would then gives them then access to the phone. It breaks into it. What they wanted to be able to do was break into it.
So what you're saying is that they overcame the limitation on the number of tries.
Yes. And then from there, obviously, it was easy.
Interesting.
We've got some conflicting information.
That would create access.
Right.
But not decryption.
Right.
No,
exactly.
The phone is decrypted because of the passcode. That's
correct.
What decrypts it. So as soon as they unlock it, they could technically...
He's not saying they unlocked it. He's saying that they got past the limitation that would prevent you from... only trying 10 times.
Oh, so that...
Isn't that what you were saying?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So they've got basically however long it takes them to try the 100,000 permutations of the password to get in.
Well, if it's a 4-digit PIN, there's only 10,000. So,
thank you.
Yeah. But there's a hardware limitation on how many times they can try.
Right, but they just got past that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so... And the reason why I'm pretty sure that they actually did is, one, because in some of the stories that I was reading that Apple... was wanting to know how the heck they did it, and the FBI wasn't cooperating with Apple as far as how they did it, and then also Apple is looking to use the same sort of access that they've created for an Arkansas case where they want to be able to unlock the phone, or the FBI is, and
the FBI says they've said they have agreed to do this. They've agreed to help this Arkansas case.
Right. So this is the camel's nose is now officially under the tent, and the rest of the camel's coming in.
Interesting.
We're done.
See, that is that's really
the news.
Annoying because that's
done
the exact one that I wake up to in the morning.
We're done with the FBI Apple.
Unhappy moment.
Good morning, Rod.
Yeah, exactly.
We're done with the FBI Apple thing, but I still have another issue with this whole case.
Oh, great. We just segued into part two. How long do we need to set the timer for now?
You can do another 4 minutes, and then we'll do part three.
What I want to know is, now that the government has dropped this insanely stupid case against Apple, are they now going to compensate Apple for all the legal fees and costs that Apple incurred defending itself against this spurious...
Ooh, I can help. I can answer that.
No.
Let's hear your answer, Rod.
No. No, they are not.
And because Apple is the richest country on the planet, or company, maybe country too, company on the planet, no one cares whether Apple lost anything or not. But had this been a smaller company, here's the thing. The core issue is still going to come back.
Absolutely, because I wish the courts would have actually ruled.
Exactly.
And there's a reason why.
And the FBI knew that wasn't going to
go in
their favor.
Well, the FBI knew that was a long shot for them to win.
You think that's why they changed?
Absolutely. I mean, I think they did get into it, but then they wanted to pull out quickly because they did not want a court ruling that would stop them from doing this in the future.
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants a baby.
And there's nothing about this.
I didn't follow that.
He said pull out early.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Please get us back on track.
Can I just say, I loved those moments watching you guys get derailed after I said that. It was a good 2 to 3 seconds.
Yeah, that was a total derailment.
That was fantastic.
I got it right away. Anyway, I think the issue here is that Edward Snowden may have been right all along. See, I don't think for 1 second that the FBI couldn't have done what they've done now.
Sure.
Prior to
that was the argument
that 11th
you made
hour thing. I just don't buy it.
They did this for the precedent that they could set.
And so,
but then they didn't. They didn't get the precedent.
But that's my point. Once they
realized they were going to lose,
my suspicion is the judge tipped them off, or hinted at, hey guys, I'm not ruling in your favor here, or maybe they saw the writing on the wall about the Supreme Court or whatever was going to follow if the judge even did rule in their favor. My point is that they're going to circle back around with the same issue. It's going to be not an iPhone. It'll be something else. And they're going to say, hey, we want a backdoor into encryption, because this ultimately was all about encryption. And you see it in the news stories. People are saying, oh, yeah, terrorists all over the world are using encryption. Yeah. And, okay. So if they were using master locks, does that make master locks illegal? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
it doesn't make them illegal. It means that Master Lock has to create a key for the FBI
that
doesn't already exist.
This is the tragedy of this whole thing. So it's going to come back down to encryption and whether we have it or not. The government's going to find a much smaller company to sue who doesn't have the deep pockets to defend themselves.
Well, and perhaps one in which they have because if they don't defend themselves, then they still don't get the court precedent. They need a company that has the pockets to have a court precedent, perhaps all the way to the Supreme Court. So what they need is a case that is a much stronger case that they think that they can win.
But
against a smaller company.
Against a different opponent. Because Apple's got the deep pockets to do whatever
right,
it takes.
But they need a court ruling precedent in their favor, or they're still at this situation.
But this is the thing.
Although, actually, technically, I take that back, sort of. Because they don't, if they have enough precedents going on in real life, then most all companies are going to say, well, this is, everybody else is caved. You don't need a court ruling then. We're not going to fight the government.
This is not how we make laws in our country, though.
Well, it's not supposed to be.
We make laws by electing representatives who then pass legislation. We don't do it by ramming cases into court so that...
You have obviously not been paying attention to the last 50 years of
maybe
law
even 100. I know.
Yeah.
But it's problematic for all of those reasons. And then this is the issue. At what point does my business, your business, or the business of one of our listeners
move to Germany,
get caught in a scenario where the government is saying, look, we want you to come do this thing, and you're compelled to do it by court order, and you have to use your time and your talents and your resources to do this thing to comply.
Right. You have no choice. You have to work for free for the government.
This is highly disturbing to me, and it's not over. And right. So that's why I say...
And just for the record, Germany would be worse.
Well, you know what, Microsoft...
Nobody has the First Amendment like we do. Nobody.
That's true. Microsoft is trying to prevent themselves from getting into this in Germany by they created a separate company in Germany for their cloud services to comply, because Europe already has wacky legislation about where data goes and it can't leave the country and certain, it's crazy stuff. Anyway,
at least it's not China.
Microsoft created a division in Germany so that your data, if you're using their Azure cloud services,
doesn't go anywhere.
It stays in Germany. And Microsoft, outside of Germany, can't access it.
Holy crap.
So they're sidestepping this by... And they actually have an agreement with another company to manage the data in Germany.
I'm really glad I don't own a really large international tech company.
Exactly.
Because this is only going to get more...
That's a nightmare.
If you have to customize your solution for every country you operate in... Dear Lord.
And now there's a bill pending before the California General Assembly.
Oh, this will be good.
That says, as of January 2017, the device, any smartphone sold in the state of California has to, from the manufacturer or from the software vendor who makes the operating system, one or the other, in order to comply, has to allow government access to the device after the fact. And the fine, if a device is sold in California that's a smartphone after January 1, 2017, it's a $2,500 fine per device. That
on the manufacturer or the people owning it?
You can't pass the cost along to the buyer.
Okay.
Is this on companies based in California?
Nope. Any device sold in California.
Hey, look, their computer just finished rebooting.
Windows 10 decided to join
us. It's back.
So anyway, now that bill has not passed. But that is in proposed legislation right now in the California General Assembly.
Sigh.
All right. Can we just
Yeah,
we should. Josh just had enough. I know. It just ticks me off. I'm sorry.
Well, and it really can impact our listeners.
It does. Because look, once California passes this law, every other state's going to have some version of it, or it won't really matter because the smartphone manufacturers aren't going to ignore the California market and say, well, we'll sell our device everywhere but California. So they're going to make the devices compliant with the California law, which is going to screw the rest of us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, they used to actually have two different models of the phones, depending on what carrier you're using. And now they're all same model. Doesn't matter what carrier. So anyway, they're obviously consolidating. They don't want to go backwards.
All right. So we have one other news item. Do we want to move on from news items?
Please.
We need to get into the meat? Okay. We'll save that.
Let's get into something good here.
We'll save that one. All right. So we did have I think this was very interesting because, you know, Rand Fishkin, who probably most of our listeners are familiar with, he's a great social marketer and all.
Can we just just let it out? Just let out the...
let out the California
the vibes
air. Yeah.
Of the topics we just brought up.
Oh, that was gone. Yeah.
All right.
I move on so quickly from those things.
That's good.
So Rand Fishkin, he does this little tweet storm on something that we've talked about a number of times on this show, and we've had guests talking about this.
Do we know who Rand Fishkin is? Have we brought him up enough?
We've talked about him before. Founder of Moz, Moz.com.
Right.
Yeah, he's...
I mean, yeah, right, exactly. So he's big on social media. He's pretty well known in certain circles.
Highly respected leader in the field of
SEO,
which has made him a leader in content over the last few years because he understands
SEO
it.
Kind of, yeah, more as Mark.
And so that's relevant then to this tweet storm. And let me just read a couple of them. He says, not sure where the idea that, quote, great content equals, quote, really, really long content came from, but we need to dispel that myth. The best content equals delivery of the best answer as efficiently, enjoyably, and authoritatively as possible. Rarely is that a huge guide. Great content, storm's not over. Great content can be turning an ultimate guide into a few visuals and a few paragraphs to more effectively communicate the same thing. And then his final one, data point, this tweet storm will almost certainly have more views, amplification, and readership than if it had made a blog post.
Okay.
True.
Rand, I'll tell you where it came from. And maybe he knows this, he just didn't want to acknowledge. I don't know. Google. You're right. These really long posts do really well.
Right. Over time, particularly. They have a real stickiness,
and
right?
I've noticed particularly the ones that have the table of contents at the top with the links to things along the... I mean, it's like Google loves those things.
So I think he's suggesting that actually that's not true. I think what he's suggesting is that Google rewards hyper-relevance more so than length. So, I mean, he's actually kind of saying...
No, you know, I think there's data showing that these long posts do really well.
Did we not have a guest actually saying that?
Yeah.
Well, we have had some speculation along those lines. So Joe Chernoff last year, who was at the time the content manager or content officer, chief content officer.
Neil Patel, the same way.
Well, we've never had Neil on the show, but Joe Chernoff did say that in their data, there were certain characteristics of posts that tended to grow in traffic over time.
Right.
And length was a factor that he mentioned, but notice that he actually said there was a sweet spot somewhere around 1,300 words, if I remember right, and that once you got to a certain length, it didn't matter that you added more to the post. In other words, the length stopped contributing to the performance of the post. So there was a sweet spot in the middle.
Yeah, I think it was like 2,500 to 3,000, something like that. Maybe that's a different source. I'm mixing the two. But
well, Neil Patel has argued for a long time that his longer posts, and of course he's talking about him, so his longer posts have performed well. The HubSpot data was looking at a large sampling of their clients' blogs, so they were looking at.
And of course, they're huge in that.
Right,
I mean, but one of them really the leaders.
But I would argue that their clients are not necessarily leaders, so that's probably a more representative sample of the general business blogging public, right? People who write content for their businesses are going to probably fall somewhere in the spectrum of the HubSpot user more likely than they are going to be Neil Patel.
Sure.
Because Neil Patel invests tremendous value in those posts.
Right.
And so I would argue that Rand Fishkin's comments this week might not actually negate what Neil is saying, because Rand was talking about answering very specifically, you know, offering the value in the answer to the questions that people are asking, right? I mean, isn't that how you read his comments?
Yeah, I'm not arguing against it. But I'm just saying, he's saying, how did we get here? I think it's because Google continues to reward it. And as long as they continue to reward long posts and favor those above the shorter ones, I think it's a factor worth considering when you sit down to write a post.
I suspect, and I don't have any real data on this, but I suspect that if you are writing it for the sake of writing it long, if you're doing a long post just so it will be a long post and it's crappy, then it's probably not going to do well and it's not going to be worth it. And so when he says, deliver the best answers efficiently, enjoyably, and authoritatively as possible. But the thing is, that could be a long post too. And then if it is a long post and it meets that criteria, probably it's going to be sticky over time a lot.
And that's what I was saying, it's all about value, right? If you're investing your content with real value, then you're likely going to perform well. But the question is, how do you answer the question, is this valuable or not? You know, how do you, in other words, before you write it, once it's written,
The market will tell you
that. Exactly, right. Yeah, but beforehand, because that's what we're all trying to do, is create content that we know is going to do well, because we're putting the time into it. You know, how do we make sure it does well?
Well, I think one specific way is to make sure that you're answering known questions. Make sure you're solving known problems for people. And then you have to do it well.
Right. So,
I mean, I think we can all agree that this is good for the user. And I think that's the argument, doing things for the user versus doing things for Google. And I think that there's still merit sometimes. I mean, I know Google's trying to get rid of spam, you know, push, you know, obviously each new algorithm update is an effort to decrease the amount of spam showing up in results. But I mean, as long as they continue to favor things like length of post over the shorter stuff, it's worth still paying attention to.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure that Rand in any way, discussed at all about the SEO value, about the Google, I should say, really, specifically the Google value in the long post. Because if Google does favor them, if it really does, then clearly that's one benefit of doing them.
Yeah.
Because you have to be found. People have to, you know, I mean, you can do some of the best stuff in the world, but if nobody's reading it, then it's a waste. You can be recording, you can be creating fantastic content, you can be painting great art, but if nobody sees it, there's really no great value in it unless you get great joy in just the production of it, which most of us want to also make sure that people see it or read it or gain from it.
Yep. No, I think, I mean, we might be beating a dead horse, but
yeah. So I think
I was trying to find some data for it. I found a Neil Patel article saying that search engine traffic converts better 9% than social media traffic, which I thought was interesting. So, you know,
I think I've seen similar numbers to that though.
Yeah.
Well, and that's another very, really important point, because I'll give you guys an example. We have a client who we wrote a blog post for. They're a pest control company here in Florida. And we wrote a blog post for them that answers questions like, how do I get rid of love bugs? Now, if you are listening to this show,
if you're outside of Florida, you don't know what we're talking
about. Well, if you're outside the Gulf Coast, so yes. If you're in Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, anywhere
along the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, along the Gulf Coast of the Gulf of Mexico, then you, twice a year, you have love bugs. And there's an old theory about where they originated. Some people say that they originated in a lab at the University of Florida. There's a lot of
all right, so for all of our listeners, the reason they're called love bugs is because there's two of them and they're attached and they're always flying together. Every once in a while you find a single one, that's sad. But generally there's almost always two of them together flying around, and they swarm in their season. Some seasons are worse than others, but they swarm and they are horrible on car fronts and all.
Oh yeah, you drive through a cloud of them, and then
everywhere.
You have guts from love bugs, and they can eat the paint on your
car.
They
will. You have to wash it off pretty quickly, or it will corrode the paint.
Yeah. So okay. Sorry. Anyway, come back. Let's come back to that. Yeah, let me finish my story.
I found it.
Okay. So you found my article?
No.
Love bug. Okay. So the love bugs blog post. Here's what happens. Twice a year, in May and in September, the traffic to this client's website spikes and spirals out like you wouldn't believe. Like, I could show you the Google Analytics traffic. Over time, it's growing. But every May and every September, it just spikes, and then it comes back down. Because everybody in the Gulf Coast, everywhere, is searching for how to get rid of these dumb things.
Right.
And it's a pest control company. Now, here's the thing. These are not converting clients.
Right.
Right? I mean, they might be from another state.
Right.
You know?
They're just getting online, trying to see what they can do in their driveway to get this crap off.
They're trying to solve an immediate problem.
Yep.
And I will tell you that that traffic does not convert well. Because it's not well aligned with the business purpose.
So that's interesting. So your point there is that even when there's a known problem, correct, and you provide a known solution, that still doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be converting to customers.
The point is that you can do all the things we're saying here,
right,
provide great value, answer, you know, really important questions and whatever, and still not convert.
Right.
Because you may not be aligning the content well with... Now, if the people who run those searches happen to be within the 55-mile radius or whatever of this client of ours, of their business, then it's tremendous for this client because those people see them on television, they see, they hear radio ads, they, so this is another really valuable impression with that client, you know, with their business.
He needs to, like, write a book about love bugs and charge 99 cents or something, well, and like capitalize off of that. I mean, maybe not worth the time, but
The beauty of this is that it creates a lot of traffic outside of that area too. So later when this business expands, which they're planning to do, you know, then they will have already started to gain.
Where did I see this company's
exactly
brand before?
I'm seeing it. So from a branding position,
they won't know.
It's fine. No, they won't remember.
No.
From a branding standpoint, it's good long term, but in the short term, it doesn't produce actual clients, most likely, right?
Sure.
It becomes just one more way. It'd be like buying a billboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
People drive by it. Interesting, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't actually
cause
anybody to take
action.
About
as untargeted as it gets.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So my point is that we could all do that. We could all create content that gets huge amounts of traffic. Like Neil Patel wrote an article. It's huge. Neil Patel wrote an article called "Why 3,000 Plus Word Blog Posts Get More Traffic." Is that what you're looking at?
No.
A data driven answer. So he claims they get more traffic. Well, they might. But is that traffic valuable?
Or even if they definitely do, is it valuable?
And does it convert well?
Right.
Right.
And that would be, I guess, the value to it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so you can ask that question about anything.
Sure. But I mean,
the argument
it's
we're making
question
here is that it's a tactic to get your articles ranking in SEO and getting traffic from it. And as long as it's a tactic that works from that end, you obviously can make improvements in all of the other areas, but I think it's...
Okay, that's legitimate.
It's still
sure
valid, and sure, his,
and you can do what Neil does, which is have a huge page takeover opt-in at the, you know, so that all that traffic sees his, you know,
yeah,
lead magnet offer, and if that's relevant, then sure,
yeah,
go for it.
Well, I mean, obviously we're hitting a bunch of different topics here, and kind of mixing the pot a little bit. But
yeah, go ahead. So, what did you find?
Well, it was also by Neil Patel in another extremely long post that I've been scrolling down forever.
Yeah, oh boy.
So case in point. but I finally found it. Basically, the conclusion he makes is it can improve rankings, but it's not that simple. But in general, he finds that the shorter ranking, more authoritative posts rank in the top one or two. And then some of those really long, long form content tends to rank in positions 3, 4, and 5, and then 6 through 10 tend to drop. So I don't know what that is, but I mean, statistically,
what was
like,
the first one? Authoritative, you said?
Well, I mean, yeah, like all of the other factors, but typically a long form content is not going to get you the number one spot, but it does tend to put you on the first page in spots 3, 4, 5.
Isn't
that interesting?
So number one spot may not equate to the traffic he's talking about. See, one of the
right,
reasons
but
he
I mean,
gets one of the reasons he gets so much traffic on these longer posts is because it's not that he's got a number one ranking on a high value term.
No, it's long.
It's because he's ranking somewhere highly for
long
10,000 terms.
Yeah, long tail search terms.
You know,
yeah.
And that's the case with all of our clients for whom we write content, like this pest control company I was talking about.
Yeah.
If I opened their Google Analytics and showed you, there would be thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of keywords that produce one visit per month.
Yeah.
Thousands of them. But you know what? That adds up to a lot of traffic.
Right.
And they get a lot of business from it.
Yeah.
And that's the reason.
I was going to say, so, and do
I mean,
they?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can show you the data. When we started to see their traffic spike, the number of leads they're generating went up. Everything went up. Their profits, their sales, all of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's I think, the argument for content marketing. If we're going back to the very
that's
beginning.
That's the classic.
I mean, content marketing is for those. I mean, short tail stuff, yeah, or short phrases, you can get some benefits from there. But I think the real huge benefit in the long term, that stuff we're wanting to gain traction over 6-12 months and really kind of build the snowball.
Yeah.
It's the long keywords.
And that's the thing is that, you know, so I read somewhere and this is older data now, and Google has not updated this because I've tried to research. But at one time they were saying that something like 40% of all Google searches run today have never been run before.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
Wow.
I mean, now that's kind of sobering.
How is that even possible?
Because you're asking, Siri questions, you're asking Google questions, you're doing it in a different way.
And that's why they're trying to incorporate.
What percentage did you say?
Like 40%. Like it was.
Sorry, are you talking about exact quote?
Correct. Yes,
I
exactly.
remember that.
Exactly.
I don't know if it was 40. I thought it was like 30%.
I would have been a little surprised at 10%,
If it's above 10%, yeah, it's inconsequential. Yeah. Right, yeah, because that's really great insight into how Google actually has to work. You think about that, right? It's not like I build a search engine that knows the answer to questions that people have asked us before. Right. It's I built a search engine that knows the answer to whatever question gets asked.
Well, you know that recently they incorporated that AI update.
Yeah.
And people are complaining that the results are less effective, that sometimes AI excludes the keyword that you put in the phrase that was the key differentiator. It gives you a bunch of results that don't have that one thing, like the key word that you were trying to, use to filter all the results. It like ignores that. So they're having some issues with that. There's a blog post written all about it.
Interesting.
And I've noticed that too.
Yeah. Is this Rank Brain? Is this the AI update we're talking about?
The
Rank
Brain update? I believe that that's the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah, because we talked about Rank Brain a few months ago, but I think it's something that we should probably explore again because it's starting to impact things.
I just want to say, because I found it, we can give the exact number. It's 15% of questions people ask of Google are questions we've never seen before, according to John Wiley, lead designer of Google Search.
Okay, but that's in 2013. See, I've seen different data from different time frames. And it
seems kind of weird that it would increase almost geometrically going forward. I mean, it's not like our language is expanding that much.
No, but the way we use search is changing so fast, right? In 2013, how many devices had the ability to ask Google, say, I'm not going to say the phrase, the magic phrase, that you say.
Right, but you say ask you-know-who, where's the nearest Dunkin' Donuts?
It's so funny.
How many times can you come up with?
You might say Dunkin' Donuts near me. You might say Dunkin' right. Donuts on, I-75.
Billions of those queries going on.
Is that really what's changing it? Most people are still typing in their searches.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I think mobile,
I'm pretty
if
sure
you
I'm
listen
right.
to what Google's saying, and they're not giving us a lot of data, but Google is saying they're driving everything at mobile. So mobile is one
absolutely.
Of the biggest factors, whether we're talking or not. But even that, now that I've got this tiny little keyboard and I'm using two thumbs, I'm going to type very differently than I would with all 10 fingers on a nice big QWERTY keyboard.
Oh, I'm not arguing that.
So my search query is going to be different as a result.
I'm still just saying a majority of them are not coming from voice-activated searches. So I think that there's obviously something else happening that's changing it. It's not.
I mean, what you're
voice
saying could be
part
true.
Of it, but I don't think that's the main thing.
I don't know. I just don't know what percentage of it is coming from voice or not. But either way, it's changing dramatically over time. And that's the big issue that we have to pay attention
Maybe
to.
Maybe there's just more stuff on the web, more stuff to search for.
Either way, we have to realize that our...
So what do we do with that information, David?
Right, exactly. That's the question. What do we do with that information? And the answer, from my perspective, and this is how we train our clients, this is how we operate in terms of creating content for our clients, the answer for us is we do our homework to anticipate what questions our clients have. So not the pest control company, but the pest control company's customers, for example. What
right,
questions
right.
are they asking? And one of those questions was, how do I get rid of love bugs, even though it has nothing to do with pest control, right? Mm-hmm. Because the pest control company doesn't even treat love bugs. I mean, it's not part of the pest.
Right.
But it's something that their clients care about. And so, yes, it reaches a much wider audience, too, but it's also a really valuable thing for those people.
They should write about that neighbor next door who's pestering you.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a pest.
Pest control.
Sometimes your co-host can be pests.
No, but
that's my role here, baby.
But they might talk about, how quickly your paint fades in the Florida sun on your house.
That's a pest.
I mean, does it have anything to do with pest control? No, but their targets are homeowners. Right. In
the target audience.
Right. And so it's what the homeowners care about. You know, a surprising number of blog posts we've written for the pest control company are recipes.
Hmm.
And they get emailed in the newsletter. And the recipe stuff, if we look at the email open rates, insanely high. Their clients want to read the recipes.
I mean, you're talking about just recipes for chocolate chip cookies type recipes.
Because it's a Florida homeowner who's a mom.
Yeah.
Or the...
So a decision maker.
Woman of the... Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's who makes the decisions on pest control. Unless it's a huge termite where they have to... Not a huge termite, but a huge termite job where they have
Those are big termites.
They're huge. And we're going to make Mexico pay for them. But no, they're going to... Where they're going to come and taint your house and they have to fumigate and do all that. That's a really big decision, and both spouses are going to be involved in that. Yeah. But if it's like $300-$400 or whatever, they're going to come and they're going to treat, you know, several times a year or whatever. Yeah. Mom makes that decision.
Yeah.
You know, so mom likes new recipes.
Oh, heck yeah.
So it's my point is this, is that it's all about value to the right person, you know, and so we work really hard at that. And a number of their queries relate to local stuff, you know, where to find the best parks in, you know, Sarasota County or you know, whatever the counties are.
Stuff works for brand awareness.
It does.
For sure.
Exactly. It's because it's value to the right people. Is it going to be a straight line from there to someone writing a check?
No. Because like all branding, that's over time. That's a long-term commitment to people becoming familiar with who you are.
But all of those posts that have nothing to do with pest control make the one or two, you know, maybe let's call it 10% of the posts that do have something directly to do with pest control rank well. Because there's all this other stuff that Google knows gets traffic and is, you know, all of the metrics about those other posts are good.
So it pulls up the actual pest control.
It's the rising tide that lifts the important boats.
Yeah. Here's another thing with
like that?
Yeah, I did.
As it lifts the important boats.
Yeah.
So I heard this recently, and I guess I'd never really like fully thought about this, but page or websites that have more than 1,000 pages on them, there's something apparently magical about the 1,000 number. I don't know. Oh, that was weird. Did I just cut in and out, or is that just me?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't hear that, but okay.
Oh, it must have been this thing. Okay, sorry. Apparently, 1,000 or more is there's like some magic number there. And it's just interesting to me. It's an argument for, you know, one site to rule them all rather than building a bunch of, you know, microsites.
So many
you like
references,
that?
Yeah.
you know, but it's also an argument to, like, let's write a lot of blog posts so we can hit this $1,000 mark, you know?
1,000 page, yeah.
And there's also the thought that, hey, why don't I focus on just hitting that 1,000 and worry less about quality? And then once I hit that 1,000 and, you know, we've got some momentum here, then we focus more on quality now that we've got some eyeballs on it.
Sure.
So.
And of course, if you have kind of a straight line from the very beginning and you say, okay, we know who we're writing for and we know where the value is, you know, to those people. And we sort of have that always in mind, even though we deviate here and there, you know, then at the end of the day, you're going to produce results. It's like, remember our guest, Marcus Sheridan told the story of the pool company in Virginia. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just generated a list of 100+ questions that customers, and he said, any question a customer's ever asked about a pool, we're going to write a blog post about it.
Yeah.
And that was the way they became like the number one pool website in the world that also happened to, you know, make pools in Virginia.
Right.
And so and that was
so
really big for their business.
So, all right. So have we exhausted this?
We have, although I just have to say, because the numbers just slay me here. Google gets 500 million searches every day that it's never seen before.
Okay, so instead of thinking about percentages, let's just throw a big freaking number out there.
That's right. So that's the 15%. That's where the 15% comes from. If it's higher than that now, this is 2013,
This is somebody doing reverse engineering the data because they know how many big searches there are?
Right. Well, but actually, the other story, too, Google gave the total searches.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like, sorry. Yeah, 2.2 billion or whatever it is.
I clearly need more coffee. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's right. And so, I mean, the math is not hard. But the point is they're coming up with, I mean, that's 500 million every day. I mean, I realize there's billions of users and we're all Googling all the time, but that still strikes me as an astonishing number that we can every day keep coming up with that many new searches that Google's never seen before.
And keep in mind, Google has never matched that phrase to a relevant site before.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
now,
right.
Now, what that means is that every day there are 500 million, if that data is still accurate, every day there are 500 million new opportunities for you to get a website visitor.
Right.
If you're creating the content.
It'd be crazy. Like, even if they release that data, it's 500 million different searches. So, like, to find a trend in that to determine, you know, because Google Trends data, if you go to, is it just google.com/trends?
I think so, yeah.
Is all looking in the past. And
of course.
It takes them some time to,
they,
like,
they haven't
turn
quite
it into
figured
something.
Out to look into the future yet.
Right, and it's right. All, so it's not like, it's not niche trends. It's like overall
global.
Huge trends.
Exactly.
So it's not something, by the time it happens, you can't really capitalize off of it.
But if you know, like, we know some topics that are going to come up, right?
Yeah, so, like Trump. He'll be in the news.
Trump
the
is going to be in the
50
news.
Freaking years.
The RNC is in what, July? The
Republican National Convention? Yeah, yeah, that's in August.
It's in August? Okay. So, and
I feel bad because I just brought him up. Come on.
And the
feeding the freaking beast.
And the Democrats, they're going to have a convention. April is like National Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Right.
May has some, you
events,
know,
yeah.
And some of those, you know, national months.
Every
and
day is something special.
Well, but my point is,
Hug Your Mom Day.
Some of those are bigger than others, right? And you can kind of look at the list and you know, okay, that one's going to be big. So, you know, write about it ahead of time. Get it. You can to get ahead of the traffic.
Absolutely.
There are ways to get ahead of some of it, you know.
Like April Fool's.
Absolutely.
I heard this morning that Tom Cruise is doing Top Gun 2. And of course,
You bought it.
No, no. Oh, I immediately, it was suspect. And I messaged my friend. He keeps trying to tell me that it's true. And so maybe by the time listeners hear this, it's come out in the wash that it's real. I don't know. I'm still
sure. I actually heard that a few weeks ago.
Okay. So it was just now getting around to me. So it was just coincidental. My friend told me it on April Fool's Day.
Hey, we got, my big fat Greek wedding too. So, why wouldn't there be a Top Gun?
Anyway, me and my friends, huge fans of Top Gun.
Yeah.
Me and my buddy in college used to dress up at him.
Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer.
Well, because he looks like Tom Cruise. Or he looked like Tom Cruise.
Okay.
And then I could pass as Goose. Because I was taller and skinnier.
Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer have both been hired to do Top Gun 2.
That's fantastic.
Well, and Tom Cruise doesn't look any older, amazingly. So.
Yeah, he does. That's a
Val Kilmer, on the other hand.
Val Kilmer has aged. Oh, buddy, has he aged.
That would be hilarious if they incorporate
Val Kilmer is more like the rest of us. Tom Cruise does not look his age.
It gives me hope, though, because I always liked Val Kilmer as an actor. And I'm like, you know what? He's still a great actor. I don't care that his appearance has changed.
Yeah.
You know?
I am just thinking there's no way this movie is going to be as good as... I mean, the first one became legendary.
How can it be? That's an iconic film,
well,
man.
Well, and Goose, my character, is dead.
Goose died. That's true.
So unless you can bring him back somehow...
Now I want that Top Gun anthem playing. The one Harold Faltermeyer track with the guitar.
Get me going. Hum it.
That's the one. Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
So this is not a sidetrack at all.
That's an amazing song.
Oh, man. Everybody loves Top Gun.
Those of
if you
us
don't
are,
like Top Gun,
I don't, I'm
something
I
wrong
saw
with
it,
you.
But it didn't really stick with me like
classic.
That. It was like a,
it's
it was
one
a
of those
movie.
Movies you got to watch every year, you know, around Christmas
it's
time.
It's really
just
not feeling that
in there,
jive at all.
About 20
there,
years ago, I
actually,
was...
every year I dress up Halloween. That's our staple... Halloween costume.
I am considering our relationship all differently now.
Oh, good. Good.
Wow.
Right. What were you going to say, David?
I was going to say about 20 years ago, I was in a cubicle at an office playing that song, and a guy walked over and he goes, Goose is dead.
Funny.
Anyway, fun stuff.
What's the guy's name? Val Kilmer? What's his name?
Val Kilmer.
What's his name? Iceman.
Yeah.
You stink.
No, that was Slider.
Dang it.
Slider. You stink. You stink. Okay.
You're that might not be funny for someone who didn't listen to it.
I think we're starting to stink.
All right, is it time for the tool of the week?
Let's do the tools, yeah.
Tools of the week. I got a couple here. These are both good. All right, so first one, the one I teased earlier.
Yes.
Espresso, actually with the X. And if you're listening, it's the first time you realize that espresso is actually espresso.
Right.
Okay,
it's
but this one.
So annoying.
It is.
It is.
But. You know, I was part of the problem for a while. My wife was trying to tell me it's espresso. But as I became more coffee snobbish,
if you Google espresso with an X, it's only going to try and correct it.
So Google.
Oh, crap. Okay,
Google,
so I got to give you the exact.
Google's never going to rank this
exactly.
Thing.
Oh,
that's a bit of a mistake right there.
Do not name your thing after something that Google corrects.
Yes.
Well, and they also made the mistake of putting a dash in their URL.
Oh.
What?
Okay, so what is this tool, though?
Okay,
what does it do?
It's espresso with an X, dash app.org.
Oh, we'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Espresso www.ran-app.org. And what you do is you paste your little your writing in there.
Okay.
And, okay, here's what it says. Espresso is a little tool to edit texts and improve your writing style. It will teach you to express yourself through writing more efficiently and help you make your texts more readable, precise, and engaging.
So, honestly, as somebody that's written
magic.
Hundreds of thousands of words for publications and books and all, having a little app help me to write better is not super attractive.
Okay, this is not for you, Rod.
You told me earlier I had to do this. You were trying to assign it to me.
Because I wanted your opinion. I didn't think you were going to come up with an opinion of it without using it.
Really? How long have you known me?
I know, but come on. You're journalist.
Yeah. Well,
do your research.
Former journalist. But. Yeah. Yeah. So my point is that this might be really good for some people that,
listeners,
need this sort of thing. Tell me how it works, Josh.
Why don't you try this out? See if it helps your writing. I mean, we could all use some help with our writing, unless you're Rod, which...
No, everybody needs an editor. I've said that forever. Everybody needs an editor.
You're mine.
If your app can be an editor, yes, I am. If an app can be your editor, then all the better.
That's fantastic. All right, so espresso-app.org. Mm-hmm. More on that in the future as we get to try it out and use it. If you're a listener and you use that thing out, let us know.
Yeah, I would be interested to see if it helped.
Works. We don't want to just hear Rod's opinion on this show.
Have you guys ever tried After the Deadline? Are you familiar with that?
Uh-uh.
It's a WordPress plugin that's part of Jetpack now. And if you turn it on, if you have Jetpack running on your WordPress site.
I didn't know that was the name of it, though.
It's called After the Deadline. It comes up and it makes recommendations. I don't know how similar it is to Espresso app, but
I know there's another one called Grammarly that has an app, and that one works with, I guess, anything you have open in Chrome.
They have a great
any text field, right?
They have a great Facebook page. I've never used their app, but Grammarly's Facebook page, especially if you're a grammar nerd, Rod, you would like it. If you've never followed their page, it's great. Yeah. Lots of fun content.
Grammarly,
yeah.
Okay. We should get them as a sponsor for the show.
Maybe so.
Yeah, that's a thought.
Working on it.
Maybe they can do grammar checking on our audio. That would be fun.
So does anybody else do this when they search in Google and that they never actually click on the ad?
I don't. I won't click the ad.
Me too. I've always been that way. I always go down to where the actual...
The organic result?
Yes, the organic result.
I said
why
that
do
in
we
the
do
episode
that?
With Sujin.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Sujin that recently?
Oh, but we're saying like... Even if it's the thing I want, I'll go click on the organic result so that they don't have to pay for my click.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Right. I don't want them
I'm
to have to pay
them
for my
money
click.
And depriving Google of money at the same time. It's great.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. That should be.
That's so petty and small.
But I don't do it because I'm like anti-Google. No. I just do it because I don't want to waste that company's money.
Right.
I'm not going to go buy something, so I'm going to click
on it. I'm not pro or anti-Google. I simply use Google.
Speaking of audio search, DeepGram. DeepGram.com. So it's a .com name. Y Combinator Company. You upload your audio or give it the URL and it searches it and indexes it and gives you a whole bunch of data on it and a transcript. And it looks like you get the first 40 hours free. I'm not sure what the cost is after that. It's a startup, so it's kind of a new tool. So anyway, had to bring that up, tool of the week. Okay, and then here's my favorite tool of the week. And I think we should use this on our show.
Okay.
Rod. Okay, so for example, you're doing this, what's the name of your guide, PR handbook for marketers, essentially?
Yeah, the one that I'm working on?
PR handbook for businesses.
The one that's coming soon that you'll be able to download from our show.
Basic PR.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the idea. You have the opt-in on your site, and you've got this, we'll call it a bribe.
Sure.
It's an ethical bribe.
Totally.
It's an ethical bribe. Grow your list.
It's a gated piece of content that we're using to build our list.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so those are some good terms. Let's throw in another term, growth hacking. Brought this one up before. So you take that whole concept and you kind of put it on steroids. So it just looks like a number, a regular form, a regular pop-up. But after you put it in your email and say, yes, I want this free guide or whatever, it takes you to another splash page. And here's where the growth hack comes into place.
Okay.
It says, all right, your guide is on your way. If you would like this upgraded version of your guide with these, 10 additional features, so all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, this is, obviously
it's even better.
The more in-depth piece, or you can even throw in like multiple things. And then what it does is to get this item tweeted out.
Okay.
And so you tweet and then it's like, here's the other item that you want. So you do kind of like multiple things.
Yeah.
Email a friend.
And what you're doing, you're not asking for money. You're asking for the tweeted out and to email a friend at each step. Right.
Right. So you've already got email, you already know they're engaged. Even if they don't do the second step of the opt-in process, they still get it, so you still have their information. So the whole idea
I love it.
And their tagline is turn one visitor three.
Oh, nice.
Absolutely.
So that, I think growth hacking typically is like something you have to do custom. Yeah. So this is one of the SaaS products. I think it's free. I'm going to have to
look into. What's the name of the tool?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. You know, I should.
should let us know that.
Yeah.
That might be helpful.
Smart Bribe. So
Smart Bribe.
Smart Bribe. Oh, another .com here. Smartbribe.com.
Fun. Okay. Hey, we're going to test some of these out. I think I would like to try smartbribe.com, yeah. Like you said. I think that'll be fun.
So you think you can do that with your guide here, Rob?
Yeah, right.
So either take some stuff out or put some more.
Yeah, I already beefed it up some, but I'll look at it and
or
see.
We could do a piece of like video or audio content as part of the upgrade.
True.
You
know?
Or we could turn it into a 3,000-word blog post.
Or not.
Well, according to Rand Fishkin, we should just, you know, develop a really high-profile Twitter account and to tweet instead.
Right,
because,
yeah.
Because apparently that's better than his own blog posts. Anyway.
We'll get on that.
Yeah, that's
get
fun.
Right on that.
We'll get right on that. Absolutely. Fun show today, guys. I have no idea how long we went because Windows 10
I was noticing that, too. I don't know.
54 minutes.
Oh, really? Are we under? Hey!
Well, no. No, we're good.
That's what I mean.
Good.
Stop right now. We went long a couple of times, so now we're under that time. That's what I meant. Sorry.
Excellent.
Fun show. I'm excited about this. So we're going to try out some of these tools. We'll let you know on upcoming episodes how those work. We have some great guests coming up. So don't miss upcoming episodes. By the way, hey, we got our SSL certificate thing worked out.
Thank God.
Our show updated in iTunes this week for the first time in, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. And
I'm sure some of our listeners had no idea.
Right. Well, iTunes software never had a problem. Your iPhone or iPad never had a problem.
Their website.
It was just the official iTunes site because they use this old Java 6-based, you know, tool. Anyway, bottom line is we were using Let's Encrypt. So if you run across Let's Encrypt, it's really great. It's easy. You can install an SSL certificate for free on any site, even if you haven't had one for a while or ever. We're running Nginx on our site. So I use Let's Encrypt. Beautiful. It was the fastest SSL certificate I've ever installed in my life.
Terrific.
Problem is...
Oops.
Apple doesn't support it on that one tool that lists podcasts in the iTunes directory. So anyway, our show didn't update for a while.
Wow.
So this week we switched back to a commercial cert. By the way, if you need a commercial certificate, I'm linking out to the place that I went this week, and we got our certificate for less than $25. Maybe it was less than 30 by the time it was all done. But it was
Can you get there doing gtdshow.com/SSL?
Is that the one? Maybe. I don't remember if I set
for
up a link.
For listeners who need a SSL cert?
No, because we don't own gtdshow.com yet.
I know, but by the time this goes live, we should.
Okay, we're going to go buy a domain, and we're going to set up a short link.
Before this goes live.
We'll be back. No, in any case.
we'll be back in a moment.
Either way, we'll have it in the show notes for today. But it was a great deal on the SSL certificate, and we got it up. It didn't take long to install. But anyway, that worked. So you should check out some of the most recent shows. If you missed Sujan Patel, great show.
Yeah.
If you missed the show that we did on PR recently, Rod, we did a whole show on publicity. That
Were
was,
you here?
Well, you weren't. You were in Italy.
I was just funny.
You were becoming mucho.
Yeah.
Joe.
The name changed. Anyway, we wrote a 3,000 word blog post on that.
Yeah, you should.
I don't know
that
how
would be
I
great.
Could, yeah, that's not that interesting story.
That would be great. Okay, anyway. So catch those shows. If you would like to tweet us, we'd like to hear from you. You can tweet us at GTD Show. That'd be great. You can also find all of the archives of our show at growthedream.com/show. You can actually use growthedreamshow.com.
Ooh, you set up that? Cool.
Yeah, well, that's been set up for a while, but I don't know why we never mention it. It just, you know.
I don't know.
You there. So anyway.
See you next week.
Yeah, it'll be a fun show next week.
See Marketing you. Mondays.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.